We believe that you can build an amazing life of significance by serving fewer, wealthier clients extremely well. We also believe you can do it faster and with less effort than you ever thought possible. Let us show you how to race up the hierarchy of advisor success. Welcome to the Preeminent Financial Advisor Podcast.
I'm Paul Loftes at CEG Worldwide, and at CEG, the number one coaching firm for financial advisors, we believe you can build and have an amazing life of significance by serving fewer but wealthier clients and doing it extremely well. CEG Worldwide is a coaching firm that helps financial advisors accelerate their success and build simple yet elegant wealth management businesses that are indispensable to the right affluent clients.
And I'm Catherine McBreen from CEG Insights. CEG Insights was born of a strategic fusion of two industry powerhouses, Spectrum Group, a leader in affluent investor research, and the research team of CEG Worldwide, the number one coach for financial advisors. With over 20 years of affluent investor research and extensive coaching experience, CEG Insights empowers senior executives to engage with financial advisors, sharing insights and actionable steps for sustainable organic growth.
Well, a great big welcome to all of you out there. My name is Paul Loftes, your co-host on this journey.
And I'm Kathy McBreen, your local market research nerd, and I can't wait to share things with you.
You're not just any nerd, Kathy. You are an amazing, amazing researcher, and I can't wait to share some great insights. As a reminder for our listeners, Kathy, this is the Preeminent Advisor Podcast, and this is all about helping our listeners play to win, to move up market, work with higher net worth clients, earn more than they ever thought possible, and to do it easier and faster than they ever thought possible. And one of the reasons that they can do that is because of your great research.
Well, thank you. CEG Insights, we're pretty proud of our research. We've been doing this for more than 30 years, and we think we're the best market research analyst in the affluent market. So, you know, we go on a regular basis, and we do both online and telephone and all different types of research with wealthy individuals, and we try to bring it together and then share it with yourself, Paul, and other people at CEG to get the real, you know, the real down to earth, what happens on a day-to-day basis, as well as what do investors want, and put it all together for people so that we can tell them what should be done.
Yeah, that's right. And our team at CEG, CEG is the world's premier coaching and consulting firm for elite financial advisors. So we have decades of practical experience of coaching thousands of financial advisors, not just in the United States, but internationally as well. So we know the best practices to work with high net worth clients and to move up market. So it's great to marry your recent research with our practical experience and to share these great, great insights. Before we jump in, anything exciting going on in your life? I think last time we talked, you had had a new grandson.
I did. So, I had a new grandson, and he's like growing really well, and I'm really proud of him. And I hope to spend more time in the Chicago area so I can spend more time with him. And my youngest daughter just recently returned from an enormous trip to Italy, where she was able to go, you know, it's the trip of a lifetime where you're able to go. Every weekend they went to a different place because it's so inexpensive for students like that to travel. So she was based in Italy, but she went to Paris and Morocco and Prague and, you know, Munich. And so it was like the dream of a lifetime that I would have loved to have done when I was her age. And when we took her to the airport that day, she was scared to go. She's crying, "Mom, you're banishing me to Italy." And I'm kind of like, I wish I could be banished like that. So she had a fabulous time. So that was exciting for our family.
Her desire and her love for travel, did she inherit that from you?
Yeah, probably, but I wasn't able to do stuff like that when I was young, that's for sure. It's a different time, isn't it?
So I think about that with my kids too. I mean, it's a blessing, but the things that I'm able to expose my kids to at the ages that they are is drastically different.
Right. So what's going on with you?
I I'm down here in the office in the house, and there's a lot of activity going on upstairs. We are on, Kathy, we like to kind of be a little bit quiet about the dates that we record these, but so that they can kind of be evergreen. But this is during the holiday season. Kids are on break, and my son is busy baking away.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, baking away. So I have a 13-year-old son, and he, typical 13-year-old, loves video games, into sports, all of that type of stuff. But what you would never know until you got to know him or just look behind the curtain a little bit, this kid loves to cook.
That's awesome.
Loves to bake. And so he's up there whipping up something something amazing for us today.
That's great. I will confess, my son-in-law cooks all of our holiday meals for us because he is by far the best cook. So that's a great trait to have.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're excited. You know, we hope he's able to, make something out of that if he wants to continue to pursue it. I actually think that's a good little anecdote to kind of set up our conversation today. And what we're going to talk about today is, we're going to continue to discuss some of the research from the great special report that you did on the 25 million plus opportunity. And, to set up what we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk about what I call the high net worth SOS, that they need more help than you think they do.
Absolutely.
And you never can take something for granted until you kind of look behind the scenes and know what's really going on. Like with Minsu, my son, nobody would ever know. They think this is a sports kid, or this is a video game kid. They'd never know that, hey, behind the scenes, what this guy really wants is a fancy blender.
Right. Oh, good for him.
That's what he's looking for. He's looking for I think with the high net worth, we tend to sometimes have an assumption about what they want, how things are going. But if you peel back the onion, it can really be quite different behind the scenes. And this is a tremendous opportunity, tremendous opportunity. So what we're going to talk about here today is going beyond investment management. And I'd like for you to jump in, Kathy, and just set up your research. For those of you that are on the video feed, I'm showing this research on the screen, going beyond investment management. Kathy, it looks like here you began to do some research and have some conversation with the ultra affluent market about the different types of professional advisors that they use.
Sure.
And what did you learn?
Well, first, let me tell you a little bit about our research. So this research in particular is with households with more than $25 million of net worth. We started doing research way back in 2005 with what we called the ultra high net worth, which were people with more than $5 million. But all of a sudden, we realized a lot of our clients were really going even up market from there into the $25 million range. And so since about 2007 or 2008, we've been doing research with those in the $25 million plus net worth market. So when we say net worth, we don't include their primary residence in determining their net worth, but we include everything else. So these investors we've been doing research with since the early 2000s, and some of them we've even met in person. And what's interesting about this group, and Paul and I have talked about it a little in the past, is it used to be a lot of our first $25 million plus households are no longer with us. So I think we can say originally this was sort of an older group, but as years have gone by, we really find that an increasing number of millennials actually fit into this $25 million net worth category. And I used to chastise my researchers and say, this doesn't make any sense. Why are there so many millennials in your sample? But what it turns out is, as our demographics in the United States are changing, not surprisingly, a lot of young people are now worth $25 million or more. The other thing that's important to remember is that for years, we've all been talking about this great transfer of wealth. And I used to be looking for it and be looking for it and be looking for it. And in the last few years, we're really starting to see this transfer of wealth. So a lot of these young people that have more than $25 million of net worth are also people who have inherited it. So that's something that you need to take into consideration when we look at the particular findings that we have in this study. So with that, we asked investors about the types of advisors that they used. Now, this particular question doesn't ask who's your primary advisor. It asks what types of advisors do you use? And it's segmented it by age. So I'll just hit the highlights because there's about, 12 maybe different categories in here that we let people answer. But for the most part, 44.6% of the total population use an accountant. But as that age goes up, for example, 68% of baby boomers are using an accountant as well. And this could, people could check more than one box in this particular question. RIAs, about 34%. Full service brokers are about the same at 34%. Investment managers, that's somebody that I would define as an independent manager that's out there. Often they specialize in certain types of things like bonds, et cetera, or maybe just what an investor calls their own financial advisor type. So that was 33%. Attorneys, 31% total, but when you get to the baby boomers, it goes up to 75%. Independent financial planners was 27%. Family offices was 21%. I'm going to hit the highlights going down. But when you look at the number of millennials using a family office, it's at 30.9%, and Gen Xers are at 33%. So those were the primary. We have a multifamily office, only 18% total, but 34% of the millennials are in a multifamily office. So as you can see, investors are using different types of advisors, and it makes sense to most of us that to get a holistic financial view, you would have an attorney and an accountant and a financial person. But what it also shows is a little bit of a lack of not, especially when these younger generations who really maybe haven't reached out yet to hire an attorney or hire an accountant just to focus on them or a tax planner. So it shows you that even though we believe and know that these people want holistic financial planning, sometimes they don't really know where to go to get what they want. Does that make sense, Paul?
Your explanation makes sense. The reality of what's happening here doesn't make sense, which is why there is so much opportunity. So, to remind our listeners, in my background, I ran the wealth management business for one of the large broker dealer networks. And so when I look at data like this, I kind of always look at it through the lens of helping my advisors identify, what's the real story here? And there's a couple of things that I think are really, really interesting for advisors to think about in serving the affluent market that's told here. Number one is a ultra affluent investor should have checked yes on almost every single one of these. I mean, it's impossible to think that under 50% say that they have an accountant relationship.
Right. And we talked about that. Because it could be that some of these younger people, the millennials, as you note, a lot of them have a family office or a multifamily office relationship. So that in essence could take up for the accountant, but it's still unusual that they don't identify an accountant as an accountant.
Yeah. Same with attorney, same with a private banker, which I would say a preferred banking relationship critical. For somebody that, is a high net worth individual, trust company. So, I mean, all of these things you would want to see here, 100%. And so there's a couple things going on there that you can interpret it. And again, both of these illustrate opportunity. Number one is a portion of this data is it's just not happening. So, we talked about in a previous podcast, one of the surprises with the affluent marketplace is they actually kind of have the same problems, same concerns. Right. One of those is execution on planning.
Right. Absolutely.
So there's real opportunity here in this data that some of these things are not being addressed. But I think the other thing that happens is I guarantee you we could talk to the advisors here, and some of the advisors would say, well, these things are being addressed. Maybe they're being addressed, as you said, as part of the multifamily office. But the fact that the client would still answer no is extremely telling, as far as their perception of what's being done. And what's happening.
We did another study called the Wealth Management Gap just recently. Yeah. And it was fascinating how many people said, like a financial advisor would say, we do this, 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 and this. And you would ask the investor, do they receive those services, or did they even know that their advisor offered those services? And it would be an astounding gap of like 30 or 40% that didn't even know their advisor did that. Or they may not interpret it in the same way, you know, that we in the financial services industry interpreted. Sometimes maybe they just don't really understand that they have a financial plan. I mean, it could be that simple sometimes. So yeah. It's just fascinating.
One of the secrets to working with the affluent market is making them feel great about the services they may already be getting that they don't realize they're getting.
Right.
And so really, you know, tying all these things together, making sure it's understood how they're working together is really, really important. So I want to jump over here because, again, what this showed us is that, again, all of these different professionals that have subject matter expertise in an area, almost all of them were under 50% when they should have been near 100. Now, we couple that with the question that was put to them. How important is it that all of these individuals should be collaborating and communicating together, which really gives us some insight into their view of having a holistic plan? And so what did you find here?
We asked the question how important it was that they kind of not network, but communicate with each other. And we found that 57.1% said it was extremely important, and 23.2% said it was somewhat important. So that basically gets you over 75% of investors believe that their professionals that they work with should be coordinating amongst themselves to try to, you know, give them a holistic type of financial future. Of those that said it wasn't important or not at all important, you're really down around 10%, with about 8% saying they didn't care one way or the other. But basically, this research is saying that you need to be talking to their other financial advisors of different types. So as you can see, I don't know, Paul, based upon this, what do you think? How would you advise different advisors to go out, and how should they be reacting to this?
It's really fascinating because, again, in these areas of holistic wealth management where you an individual should be like 100% that's being addressed. They're saying they don't have those relationships not being addressed, yet they're saying it's really important that everybody work together. So they want it. They want it. And I know we've got additional research that we're going to look at in recent week and upcoming episodes that, you know, dives into that further, but they want it. So there's a gap here for individuals that want to play to win, that want to move up market, to really be able to step in and deliver some value by making sure that an individual is getting served in all of these different wealth management disciplines and that they're coordinating and communicating everybody together. So we're going to talk on our next podcast about something called the virtual family office model. So I want to tease that. That's really a great solution for this. But let me just give the listeners, like, here's where you can start today. If you've got somebody that is, you know, $5 million and up in investable assets, I might even back this down, Kathy, and say, if you've got somebody with $1 million in investable assets and you want to make a difference, here's something that you can start to do today is you should know their CPA and you should know their estate planning attorney. That should be part of the discovery interview process. Who are these individuals? What have they done for you? And then you should position yourself to the client as the wealth management coordinator that is going to coordinate these relationships. You should have a total client profile of your client, what's important to them, what they're trying to accomplish, and then take the initiative to sit down in once a year works great. Some people do this more often, but sit down with the attorney and the CPA and have a joint conversation about what the client's trying to accomplish, and, you know, kind of give everybody an opportunity to contribute. It makes a huge difference in filling in the gaps on tax strategy, on estate planning strategy, and your clients will love it. And one of the side effects of this, I mean, you get to meet some great professionals that oftentimes like what you're doing and may send some additional high net worth business to you.
And, you know, one of the things that you're able to do as an advisor, and I believe that most of you will have a network, I mean, I would guess if that's typical, is to be able to refer, because there might be a point, true or not, right, Paul, where somebody comes to you and they're age 50 and they don't have an estate planning attorney or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So advisors should have their own network as well. And again, teaser for our next podcast, where we're going to talk about the virtual family office and that network of professionals that you can have to plug into. So yes, part of what advisors do that serve the higher net worth market is, you know, they have a preferred tax relationship. They have a preferred attorney. They have a preferred trust company. All right. But sometimes clients come to you and they have great professionals already. So a great first step is meet those people, because you can coordinate and work with your client's current CPA and maybe not necessarily have to introduce them to yours, but you're going to deliver great value to your client just by coordinating with their current professionals.
So, Paul, our research says that for some investors have more than one financial advisors, but most of them, like 85% we found, have most of their assets with one firm. What about when one of your investors has assets with another firm? How should you deal with that?
Great question. And again, you had some great research in this, and actually this Play to Win report that, you know, showed when there's one investment manager versus two, kind of how that breaks out. And I continue to say to advisors always think that they have all of the assets. And even if they're the only manager that the client is working with, the data shows you still don't have all the assets. There's still usually some held away. And then, of course, if there's two managers, three managers, there starts to be even more split in how much AUM you have as an advisor. When you move up market to work with higher net worth clients, the important shift here is don't, especially initially, don't fight that trend, Kathy. Realize when somebody's got 25 million in investable assets, one of the ways that they diversify is by having different investment managers or different financial advisors. So, you know, accept that going in. And the way that an advisor wants to position themselves with a high net worth individual where there's multiple advisors is position yourself as the main one that's going to take responsibility for reporting on how everybody's doing. Yeah. So that's great that you've got 5 million sitting over there. You know, what's the purpose of that? How are we measuring success? What are our KPIs to that? And then let's look, when I do my annual review annually, where we're looking at everything in context of how it's doing, we're going to report on that. We're going to see how it's doing. So I'm not competing with that person as an investment manager. I'm just, my role is to provide you comprehensive, holistic wealth advice. And now I'm just reporting factually on how everybody's doing and how this fits in.
Yes. It's sort of like that old analogy where you're the quarterback, right? And you're just making sure that everybody else is filling their role or being kind of playing their slot.
Yeah. But it's a great mind shift, because again, the conversation then doesn't immediately have to change to, hey, I'm going to be negative about what this person is doing and what I'm going to do different. You know, you just take the role of the overall general manager of everything that's going on, and you're factually reporting on it. And typically what happens over time is advisors end up winning those assets anyways, because they're the one that's then reporting on it, the one that when they do underperform or, you know, they're not meeting their KPIs, you know, you're the one that's discussing about that. So the key when there's multiple money managers and investment managers involved is just establishing the hierarchy. And you're going to report on everybody, and you're going to consolidate that in your reporting.
So, Paul, how do people take this model and apply it to a larger number of clients? Like, this would be a really difficult model to some extent to scale. So how have you seen people do this? Because some people have clients that are 25 million plus, but they may still have a bunch of clients that aren't. So what is your advice in that situation?
If you're going to play to win and have an amazing life of significance for not only building that for your clients, but also for you, your team, and your family, the best type of practice to run is one that is really geared towards working with these types of clients. And you start to gradually transition and peel back from those other mass affluent or other types of clients. And the great thing about that, Kathy, is when advisors do that, and it's 100% doable, we've helped hundreds of advisors do this over the years, you do have time. You do have time to customize and do these types of things and do this type of service. In the meantime, as advisors are transitioning, the key thing to do is just realize that really serving the ultra affluent 25 million and up, I'd even say starting at the 5 million, that you're going to have to carve out different systems, different processes, different service models to effectively compete in this business. And if you don't, you'll always probably just have one or two of these types of clients, but you won't really be able to scale up there. So I call it the high net worth SOS. Don't take on the surface level that high net worth individuals have got all of their wealth management needs met.
Right. You need to ask and make sure that they have help with estate planning. Do they have help with taxes, which you would think would be the most important to them, and any other types of investment opportunities they may want that maybe you don't offer? I mean, there's lots of questions to ask about what it is that they think that they should have versus what they actually do have.
Yeah. And jump in. Advisors, one of the practical things that they can do right away is be the coordinator, especially of the tax relationship, which is typically the CPA and the accountant and the estate planning attorney.
And it's really important to understand that they expect that. Obviously you need to ask, but it's actually an expectation that you're going to coordinate all of these different pieces of their financial profile.
Yeah. And then in those cases where you know your clients are working with additional managers, accept that, but establish your role in the hierarchy as far as you're going to report holistically where all of the assets are and how they're performing as part of KPIs. We're not doing that to make anybody look bad. I mean, we're doing it to generally serve the client so that they have a holistic picture. And when you do that over time, oftentimes it presents a lot of opportunity to perhaps, eventually bring some of those things in-house to your management.
Absolutely.
So, Kathy, I want to tease next podcast that we're going to do. It's going to be on the virtual family office. So this is something at CEG with our coaching and consulting clients, we are very, very big on. And it is a business model, a delivery model that really allows a lot of the things that we're talking about to be delivered in a very, very effective way. Until then, I want to thank everybody for listening. As always, it's great to see you, Kathy. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.